Welcome to And I'm Thinking About. This is a podcast, dare I say, composed of an informal collective of conversationalists. That's how I've been putting it recently. I'm Caroline. I'm in my early slash on the brink of mid-20s. I take an interest in many things. Many things and concepts, and what a cringe thing to say, but I'm currently floating, and I'm trying to figure out so many questions related to my own quarter life crisis, my so-called purpose. I just finished, I'm quite late, but Sheila Hedy's Pure Color, and she discusses humans as God's creations were divided into three different animals, supposedly, in this novel. Either the fish, a bird, or a bear. The birds are the intellectuals and artists of life. They're the ones that fly high up and see the world kind of in the abstract, in the contemplative. Yeah. And then there are the fish, who lay their eggs, and eventually swim off, and kind of their life's purpose pertains to giving life beyond what they'll be living themselves to see. Does that make sense? Kind of the altruists, the do-gooders, those that I guess you'd call the fixers of the world that hope to contribute to a life beyond what they'll directly experience, live, see, etc. Then there are the bears that only care about their direct cubs, what they're seeing directly in front of them, their immediate close family and loved ones. So I'm in this space since reading that of kind of balancing the three, and my background's in international relations / political science, and I diverged from there hyper over questioning the extent of which politics ultimately make the world a better place. And as of the past 3 or so years, been quite passionate about the creative art realm, and now getting to a point of hyper-questioning, does art really matter when the world is burning and people are suffering? I should stop playing with the mic, shouldn't I? Oh, all right. So amidst this angst of purpose and intent, I find a lot of solace in hearing people's thoughts. The way I would dissect it is it's in that optic nerve for visuals, which is, that's the nerve in between, I guess, your eye and your brain, but also in the, it's called the eighth cranial nerve. So those are the nerve endings which translate sound from vibrations into like electrical impulses to the brain. I'm not very scientifically well versed, but those two nerves that translate sight and sound. I think that those little in-between spaces, I find that those spaces are not, when they're not just showcased but shared, when people kind of communicate that thought process of how they're translating the world that we inhabit, when we share that and listen, we maybe become better people by way of expanding our empathy. Yeah, that all came from, I spent the last year and a half in Hanoi, and I was surrounded by the contemporary creative scene, we can call it, and I had a privilege to not just be immersed in, or attend rather, like formal exhibitions, performances, screenings, talks, but above all else, I was able to have conversations with really brilliant people, brilliant minds, rather, about how they process the world and how they re-communicate the things that they process. And obviously being an artist, like a formal artist, that is your profession, your category of human is to translate the world. And that nerve, those nerves are your cognitive medium. But we're in this day and age of storytelling, right? everyone's obsessed with this prospect of writing story, but locating story, transmitting story, and ultimately everyone has a story. And I was talking with my friend Sao today, and this analogy came to mind. It's kind of like a paintbrush. We're all paintbrushes, where we each have our own wooden bodies and bristles, and we're all various sizes and various forms and various qualities and degrees of ruggedness and usage and financial investments and the background of our making. But beyond the story of how the paintbrush came to be, I find that those two nerves, the optic and the eighth cranial, those are the determining points of our brush stroke. And that stroke, that's our breath of how we contribute to our respective ecosystems, to put it that way. And the brush strokes that I've encountered in that last year and a half are so damn fascinating. And when we allow them to come into contact with our personal space in this world, those brush strokes, when they interact with our mini pseudo canvas, they naturally make our canvas, our space, our perception of the world, and our respective, once again, purpose, they render it all a bit more colorful. So to come back to the purpose of this podcast, I want to share those brush strokes via conversations with the people paintbrushes. And the core seed was planted in Hanoi, where it was heavily watered also by the abundant monsoon rains. But I find I've had many other seeds of conversation planted prior or after, during, throughout, and even the title of this podcast, and I'm thinking about, stems from a conversation or voice memo exchange, digital letter, pen pal is how we put it, with my high school English teacher, Miss Carver. And I told her how I adore one line she always says after I exchange something that I've experienced or observed, is the thought that it provoked within her. So she'll naturally say, "And Caroline, and now I'm thinking about XYZ." And I told her recently that what I love about our ongoing exchanges since I graduated is less so necessarily a chronology and kind of checklist of things that have happened in our lives as a kind of linear update, but rather just thoughts that have traversed both of our minds as we're experiencing the day to day. That exchange is what makes that type of bond so special. I think the concept of sharing the conversations and the brush strokes and what people are thinking about found its inspiration in Hanoi, and this podcast will very much be premised on those conversations with various creative, reflective, thoughtful folk, but will not be limited to. And yeah, perhaps just a podcast about what people are thinking about, whilst curating the people that of this collective of conversationalist. But yeah, that's welcome. End the recording as a starting point, but I think it's only fair if I start the spirit of what this audio series is with a bit of a amuse-bouche, dare I say, of what I'm thinking about. And I work at Lulu Restaurant, which was started by Alice Waters and David Tenise, kind of Alice Waters, founder of the whole farm-to-table food revolution in the States. That's a whole other conversation of thought and whatnot. But it's located within the Hammer Museum, which is my absolute favorite space in the entire world. I think my dream in life is to possess the Hammer. It's just a wonderful cultural center. I'd like to say more than even just contemporary art museum. It's run by UCLA. Never-ending free cultural events, really wonderfully curated exhibitions that I find are super accessible to the average public, while still preserving a super impressive curatorial quality, super original narratives and brushstrokes, dare I say. And I mention this because the recent exhibition that they have, or the current one rather, is Alice Coltrane Monument Eternal. It was curated by Erin Christovale, who I've had the pleasure of interacting with several times amidst my various restaurant work. Maybe I read the blurb. It'll be the exhibition Alice Coltrane Monument Eternal is inspired by the life and legacy of jazz musician, devotional leader, and mother Alice Coltrane, born 1937, Detroit. The title takes its name from her book Monument Eternal, 1977, which reflected her newfound spiritual beliefs, the loss of her husband, the saxophonist John Coltrane, and the path to healing and self-discovery. The exhibition presents works by contemporary American artists paired with ephemera from Coltrane's personal archive. It features a range of mediums, video, installation, performance, sculpture, together with Coltrane's archival handwritten correspondence, unreleased audio recordings, and rarely seen video footage. Alice Coltrane Monument Eternal explores themes including spiritual transcendence, sonic innovation, and architectural intimacy to honor Coltrane's cultural output and practice. So, after that little red blurb, just wanted to mention you can spend hours within this exhibition, again, given the various mediums and installations, and they have, let me see. Say 2 dozen artists, LA-based artists that have contributed. And the best bit, there's this kind of amphitheater style in terms of layers of like different heights of seating, orange couch, in the earlier end of the exhibition that's more focused on her like professional musical evolution. And surrounding the couch on the walls is her discography, which again, I want to say it's between a dozen and 20. And such an interesting evolution of her life path, which is going from, I guess, much more jazz focused to then taking a much more spiritual kind of international experimental harp entrance and whatnot. And it's oh, it's so wonderful just to like see it visually, the discography on the various records. But this couch, this wonderful orange amphitheater-esque couch, it has a bunch of headphones plugged into it, and you can sit on the couch, which I love. You can touch the couch, and each of the headphones is playing a different record from this discography, so you can. I mean, as I said, spend hours in the exhibition. You can spend hours just at this bloody orange couch, listening to each record and just kind of being just floating. No, transcending. Maybe it's that's excessive. Whatever, meandering in that specific chapter of her audio artistic aesthetic evolution. That chapter, rather. Yeah, that's an easier way to put her, that chapter of her life and music. And I mentioned this and why I'm thinking about it. It's just this idea of like headphones and just being able to zone into someone's world. And I guess being a lot within the Hammer space and also Hanoi, it's a lot of conversation with like the curatorial aspect, which is a much more recent development in the art scene, is like a focus on curation and curatorial work. I think that's everywhere also, the value of like curator that's now kind of the same degree as artist, like kind of clout even with the title and craft. I feel as though that being more like commonly perceived as such is a sort of like relatively really recent development. Anyways, in the broader like art history of things. But yeah, this idea of headphones and just zoning into someone's world. I just started to think about that a lot, and maybe I think that's kind of like my dream exhibition that I would curate in podcast manner, or like audio manner, with this idea of what everyone's think, what everyone, what people I would like to curate, interesting folk that I haven't encountered, to imagine like throughout a city for starters, or like a beyond museum, like a city, a patch of street, whatever, various headsets, that you can just pick up and put on, and then you're hearing what this specific person is thinking about, and their thought process, and you get to discover their optic slash eighth cranial nerve, and then put it down, and then say that's like at a bus stop. If I'm talking about Los Angeles location, maybe it's the bus stop on like Westwood and Lynbrook, right outside the Hammer. Then you take the bus and you go down Westwood all the way to like Westwood and what's it, Manning, maybe. And it's outside the Iranian Bakery House of Bread, and there's another headphone, and you get to listen and just tune in to a specific per, like the security guard at the Hammer. I always think about what he's thinking about, given just seeing this rotation of cultural production and people. And some people are super pretentious and awful in the art scene, but also you're seeing kids because they do school trips all the time to the museum, and you're seeing like you're, it's just such an encounter, interesting encounter of life, I think, to be in that position. So I always wonder what he's thinking about. And yeah, so that's yeah, that's what I'm thinking about currently, is if we made that in like a global scale of kind of like mushrooms, instead of mushrooms, there were just headphones that would appear throughout the world randomly in grass. Maybe it'd make more sense in patches of grass that were kind of like growing out of control. And you just put the headphones in and listen and to what someone recorded at some point in their life about what they're thinking about. Or I don't, maybe they, it's not intentionally recorded, it's just zoning into their. Into their, I wouldn't be subconscious, but just their thought process, into that nerve, those two nerves, your choice of nerves of the two. So yeah, maybe I heard Sheila Hetty has also a podcast, and I listened to it recently. I don't think you should listen to it because then you would see that the way I'm doing this, it's like kind of embarrassing how much I'm replicating her style of a very candid recording and whatnot. And but this I have to credit her too for an outro music. She just like took out her phone and played the music, and I thought that was, what did she play? She played oh, what was it? It was To All the Girls I Loved Before. Yeah, I forgot how much I love that song. It was my parents' 25th anniversary yesterday, and I played that when they came home for dinner, and it was. So thank you, Sheila Hetty, for reminding me of how wonderful that song is and making my parents' anniversary so nice. But yeah, I think it's only right to play Alice Coltrane. So this is Journey in, I can never say it right, Journey in Sachinanda, Alice Coltrane and Pharrell Sanders. Okay, this is outro. Okay, I think this is where I say thank you for listening. Oh, yeah, it wasn't graceful, but.